Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett, here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Today we have on Matthew Sullivan, who is the founder and CEO of Quantum Marine. We'll get into what that company does in a second. And also honored to be co-hosting the show today with my friend Radu. Why don't you say hello and just give a brief introduction of who the hell you are?
Hi, so I'm Radu Bolohan. I run an investment company in Canada. We're mainly focused on high net worth individuals. And invest in a number of asset classes, but really focus on equity value.
Right on. So happy to have Radu come co-host this with me. And Radu, you know, I want you to feel free. You know, you're not second in command here. Justin's is in much control of the show as I am today. So any questions that you have for Matthew when he's asking, just feel free to butt in and we'll have a good conversation. Does that sound good, Radu? All right, right on. And Matthew, so welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and about the company that you started?
Well, the company is Quantum RE, and what we're doing is we're taking real estate and we're putting it on the blockchain with cryptocurrency. So my background is very much finance, technology. I've been an entrepreneur all of my life, pretty much. As you can tell, I'm not from round here. I was originally from the UK. I was born just outside London and moved to the US 4.5 years ago. When I moved over here, one of the first things I set up was a real estate crowdfunding company. And so I was sort of thrown in at the deep end with all the recent changes in securities laws with the Jobs Act, and had a very early introduction to fractional real estate investing.
And what had you get into? You know, were you an entrepreneur first, or were you into real estate first?
I was an entrepreneur. I think the question is one born an entrepreneur, or do you become one? So I think that's a question that always remains unanswered. But no, I was always an entrepreneur. I was involved in technology and finance really since my early 20s. So I'm in my sort of early 50s now. So I've been involved in startup companies for the last 25 plus years. And I was involved in the internet back in the late 90s and early 2000s. We created Europe's first outsourced internet billing company, where we could bill internet traffic by the byte or by the kilobyte rather than just a fixed cost. So again, had a very early introduction to these types of technologies.
and tell us the progression of how you got to where you are today with this company. Like, what inspired you to start it? What gave you the idea? Any kind of hurdles you had along the way?
Yeah, there were a few hurdles. like any good entrepreneurial journey. Well, I first heard the word blockchain, I think it was 4 years ago, when I was at a conference in Silicon Valley. And a certain Mr. Tim Draper was up on stage delivering a presentation, and he was saying how exciting the blockchain was. And of course, I, like everybody else in the audience, busy Googled the word blockchain, and the words distributed ledger technology came up. And of course, you know, I was scratching my head thinking, I must have Googled the wrong one, because this doesn't sound terribly interesting. I mean, what could possibly be interesting about a distributed ledger technology? And obviously people far smarter than I immediately understood the enormous implications that blockchain and these types of technologies will bring. So that was my first sort of introduction. And since then, I went to a number of other conferences to do with really crowdfunding and blockchain, and became involved in cryptocurrency about 2 years ago, but was always on the outside, because one of the biggest questions that I couldn't answer was I just didn't understand what Bitcoin in particular, because that's what everyone was talking about. I couldn't understand what it was based on. I understood, you know, the technology, and, you know, it was a very exciting distributed, value transfer mechanism, but really scratching my head, you know, I just didn't understand how it could have value. And that's really what prevented me from getting, deeply involved as an investor. But then over the last sort of last 18 months, began to formulate what ultimately becomes Quantum RE, which is how do you take all the technologies behind cryptocurrencies and the blockchain, and how do you attach them, apply that to an asset class so that you have a cryptocurrency backed by real estate. So it was really that sort of, that was the pathway that took us to where we are today.
All right. So how do you do that?
Okay. And using one sentence, please describe how you, what we do is we take, if you look at, there are a number of different token technologies, but we really combine an old world REIT structure, so a traditional REIT structure, and we, rather than issue certificates or shares, we will be issuing tokens, and those tokens will be tradable in a secondary market that's provided by authorized exchanges that are known as ATS exchanges, or alternative trading systems. Very much like sort of the old pink sheets, as it were. Mm-hmm. And so our token, rather than trading through traditional certificates, will trade using blockchain technologies. And each of these tokens will represent an ownership interest in a pool of real estate assets. So therefore, each token will have a net asset value that is directly correlated with the underlying value of the fund.
Okay. Interesting. Radu, do you have any questions for Matthew?
Yeah, I was actually, it's a nice description, but you just kind of walk us step by step how the product works, right?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing to look at is what is the underlying asset class, and that's where it becomes very different to a traditional REIT that's based on commercial property or rental properties. So the first thing that we wanted to look at is how do you create a REIT that is scalable? Because if this product takes off, one of the critical things that we're going to struggle with, as any investment manager will struggle with, is how do you match the amount of capital that's coming in with the amount of real estate that you can commit to? Because what you want to do is avoid capital drag. In other words, you want to avoid sitting on large amounts of capital in cash, because obviously that's not performing. One of the asset classes that we looked at 4 years ago was equity release, or shared equity. One of the benefits of shared equity is it's a very scalable product, because what we're doing is we're buying some of the equity in someone's home whilst they still live there. And the way that we do that is we effectively have an option agreement with them where we share in the potential future increase in value of their property. It's not a tenancy in common, so we're not becoming owners of the property. But what we're able to do is take a percentage of the equity that they own now, give them the value of that right away. It's not a loan. There's no interest. There's no monthly payments. We're not increasing the leverage on the property. But what we're doing is we're creating a valuable real estate asset class, because we participate in the future potential appreciation of that home. So when the person eventually sells the home, they give us our money back, which is the option price, and we then get a percentage of the increase in value if the home goes up. Now, it's a partnership, which means if the house goes down in value, we may get less, or we may actually start losing money. So it's a true partnership. Now, this is something that the people that are part of our company, they're co-owners and they're part of our management team. They come from a company that originated over $250 million worth of these types of shared equity assets over the last 10 years. So we've got some real experience and expertise in this asset class, but it's ideally suited to tokenization, because the token represents a pool, or will represent a pool of these assets, and they can be very distributed assets. In other words, we can have lots of very small deals, which gives us much more tolerance to market moves rather than having a lot of money in, you know, in a single asset.
What's the benefit? Radu, were you going to say something?
No, you go ahead. I'm processing.
Okay, I might be a little bit naive on this, so educate me. But why do this in the structure that you're doing it right now, as opposed to, a traditional, real estate investment trust or any kind of publicly traded real estate company where you're buying, partial equity stakes in real estate?
Well, the critical difference, I mean, your question really is, why would you tokenize this? Now,
right.
What makes a massive difference is liquidity. The blockchain and tokenization provides a massive option for liquidity, and it enables us to tap into the hundreds of billions of dollars that are sitting in the tokenized real estate markets. Now, that is a parallel market to traditional securities, and it's occupied by people who do not or are not able to move out of cryptos into fiat, which is dollars, and back into cryptos. There are significant restrictions around how much money you can transfer in and out of cryptocurrencies, and those restrictions are imposed by banks across the world. So if you want to trade in the cryptocurrency market, from utility tokens to security tokens to stable coins, and back to security tokens, you have to have a token that can occupy and work within that environment. Traditional securities, certificates, and shares simply don't work within a tokenized environment. So what we're doing is we're taking all the benefits of a traditional REIT structure, and those are the tax benefits and the distribution benefits to the owners, but we're putting it into an entirely different environment. So people who are owners of cryptocurrencies can buy a security token that has a very different risk ratio. It's far less volatile, or is likely to be far less volatile than tokens that are not backed by real estate assets.
So, hold on. Let me just stop you for a second. It's one. You said a lot, and I just want to break a few things down. So the first thing was, when you talk about this real estate tokenized environment that's already there, are you talking about people, say, that sold their house in Bitcoin and then received Bitcoin for it? Or what are you talking about exactly?
Well, I don't think I said that there's
a token. Maybe I misunderstood you.
There's an existing, if you look at the tokenized world, so if you look at the market capitalization of all of the tokens that are out there,
of all the cryptocurrency, is that what you mean?
So if you look at all cryptocurrencies, it's several hundred billion dollars. What we're saying is that we're creating a token that can occupy part of that
space. Part of that market, okay. Now, are there tax advantages to, like, let's say I own a ton of Bitcoin, right? Now, if I go into US dollars, I'm going to have to pay taxes on any gains on my Bitcoin. That's correct, right?
Well, yes.
Right. I mean, so if I'm going from Bitcoin to one of your tokens, is there also a tax implication to that too?
Well, my understanding, and again, the caveat is, clearly I'm not a CPA.
Sure.
Yeah. I think the general understanding, and this has been clarified by the IRS, is that if you're moving from one token to another token, it's a taxable event.
Okay.
Because effectively, what you're doing is you're realizing the capital gains of that transaction at the moment that you sell your coin, no matter what it is. And then capital gains tax or that income tax is crystallized at that point. So there are no tax advantages per se of moving into and out of a security token. It's treated as the same as any other liquidation.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead, Radu.
So I mean, you're saying that your market is people that own other coins. I'm a bit confused here about why they would buy this or how the transaction would work. I mean, are they going to give you Bitcoin and then you give them your real estate coin, or how can you explain that a little bit in a bit more detail?
So what we're doing is we're creating a securities token. So that means it's a token that is issued under U.S. securities regulations. So it's similar to a share in a publicly traded REIT, but rather than it being a share, it's issued as a token. So it sits on the blockchain and is settled through the blockchain rather than being settled through DTCC, for example. Now, the buyers are likely to be people that want to buy a token, in other words, want to buy a cryptocurrency, but want to buy a cryptocurrency that has some intrinsic value. If you look at Ether or Bitcoin or any of the other major coins, even though they have value, they don't have intrinsic value. In other words, they're not backed by assets. So for people who want to dip a toe into cryptocurrency and want to invest or buy cryptocurrencies, we believe that a token that is backed by real estate assets, in other words, that has some fundamental intrinsic value, will be an attractive offering to them. So those are people that want to buy and hold a cryptocurrency. But then you've got people that already own cryptocurrencies and want to trade in and out of them. Now, if you hold a certain number of Bitcoin and you think the value of Bitcoin is going to fall, what you want to do is sell Bitcoin and then move into something else whilst Bitcoin falls, so that you can then go back in at a lower price. Now, it's very difficult for most people to sell Bitcoin into dollars because the banks restrict the amount that you can move into and out of. So what most people do is move across to other coins that are seen as more stable. And Tether is a great example of that. What we're doing is we're providing an alternative to Tether, where we have token where people can sell their Bitcoin if they think it's going down, for example. They can hold our coin, which is more likely to be more stable because it's backed by assets. And then when the markets recover, they can sell out. And that means that they don't have to move into and out of US dollars.
But why do you think that your currency is going to be more stable? I mean, You have, so in the traditional, before we had fiat money, right? And I think this is still going on in places like Hong Kong, right? Where you have the currency backed with assets, right? But those assets, the way it used to work, I can all, you know, I could always walk into a bank, give them my bill, and then I would get my gold or whatever assets there would be, right? But there is no such convertible with your cryptocurrency. And then it seems to me if some of the main buyers would be owners of other cryptocurrency, right? Actually, the pricing of it will just be driven by flows, for example, in and out of Bitcoin. So there's a lot of people, you know, let's say they went into your currency and then they're moving from that to Bitcoin. You could see some really sharp drops. So it seems to me like that would be the dominating pricing mechanism for this, right, in the underlying.
Well, I think so. But again, if you look at parallels in the non-tokenized world, if you look at publicly traded REITs, you can draw the same parallels, because you can say that people that are selling one type of share, for example, may move to REITs as a safe haven. Because they're a non-correlated asset. So you can draw parallels. And what we find in the non-tokenized world is that asset-backed securities or asset-backed shares tend to trade at either a slight premium or a slight discount to the underlying assets. And that's normally just a few basis points or a few percentage points. So we don't see
that's usually the case, because you can pull the underlying, right? I mean, if it moves too far from the underlying value, you can just basically, you have an arbitrage opportunity, right? So let's say if I have a pool of mortgages, right, or a pool of real estate, the value of my paper goes down a lot. I can actually buy the whole paper and liquidate the underlying. But in this case, you don't have that that power because of your contract with your borrowers. Well, basically, you can't sell the equity in these homes that you've bought.
The thing is that I think what we're saying is we don't know what the value of what the trading pattern is going to be. So that's absolutely right. I mean, what we don't know, what we're not going to try and forecast, is the volatility of our token. But I think what we are saying, though, is that we believe that it will be less volatile than a token that is not backed by assets, for the simple reason is that there is a net asset value that accrues to each token. Now, we think that there are going to be more people than just Bitcoin sellers. So our token is probably not going to be a proxy, or it will not be directly correlated to Bitcoin activity. There are many other coins that make up the tokenized universe, and the number of tokens will grow significantly over time. So as the overall marketplace grows, you're not going to see this sort of direct correlation.
You're predicting that the coin's going to move up and down with the net asset value of the real estate that it's backed by. Is that what you're saying?
I think it will. I believe, based on parallel sort of similarities in the non-tokenized world, that asset-backed tokens will trade in a fairly narrow band based on the NAV of the underlying assets. Now, the NAV of the underlying assets does not move in a volatile way. So the value, the price of houses moves relatively slowly. We don't make predictions, but we believe, based on parallels, as I said, in the non-tokenized world, it is likely that our token will have a much more narrow trading band. So it will flatten out the volatility that you see in traditional cryptos.
I have another question for you. When the legal structure, so when you're buying, say 30% of someone's home, and now you have an investor owning some token that has some representation of that home, who actually has the legal claim to that home? Is it your company, or is it the token holder?
It's the same as a REIT. So in other words, the token holder has share effectively in the REIT.
Correct.
That share is tokenized. The REIT itself is a company, which is a US domiciled company, and that company has the rights to the asset class. So the token holder has those pass-through rights by way of owning a percentage of the fund.
They actually have rights. They actually do have a partial right to that asset, you're saying?
Well, they don't have a right. They don't have a direct right. What they have is an ownership in the fund, or an ownership in the company by virtue of their token. So it is a security. It's very different to a number of other traditional tokens that have no rights. Traditional utility tokens are more like, membership tokens, as it were. So our token's different because it is issued under U.S. securities, or will be issued under U.S. securities laws. And it will have similarities. It will be very similar to an equity ownership in the fund. Although,
is it going to be equity? Because I mean, you're saying if it's issued under the securities law, I mean, it's going to be either equity or debt, right?
Or it can be a derivative. So it can be somewhere in between. So it will be.
Now we get who actually owns the equity in the REIT.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah,
the token holders.
Okay.
So the token holders.
So the tokens are equities then.
Yeah, the tokens are equities, absolutely. But they're issued as tokens rather than being issued as traditional certificates.
Right, and then that means that they would have voting rights in the REIT, right?
It depends. No, they don't have to have voting rights. So we can decide what the rights are that equity owner. So in any equity offering, the company decides what rights those owners have. They don't have them automatically.
Okay, so what rights do they have?
We're still formulating the offer, but they will have rights to receive dividends. They will have rights to there'll be a number of rights which will be described in full detail in the offering memorandum. So they'll have every opportunity to read through these documents, which will be publicly filed before they make an investment decision.
And what kind of currency can you pay a dividend in? How does that work?
Well, the dividends will be paid in tokens as well.
Okay.
So our platform, the Quantum platform, is a membership-based platform. So if you want to buy or sell our tokens, because you need to be a member, we know who you are, and you will have the option of receiving your dividends in cash, in other words, in US dollars, or you will have the opportunity to receive your tokens, receive your dividends in another type of token. So we can pay you in Bitcoin or Ether or other tokens that are available at that time. So that's something that we're still building out. But as a member, you'll have the option of whether of how you receive your dividends.
Interesting.
Okay, so but here I'm getting a bit confused. I mean, why would anybody want to buy this product, to invest in this product, rather than just a regular REIT? Because it seems to me like they're paying a pretty big price.
Why are they paying a price? What's the price they're paying?
Well, as you're buying equity in these homes, right? You're not charging rent. So with a normal REIT, you know, they'd get what 3-5% a year income just from rent.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit more about how our how the company is structured. So we make money when the homeowner sells the home. Now the average homeowner duration is 7 years, but many people, you know, sell their homes earlier than that, and some sell it longer later date. The way that our contract works is we get a multiple of the amount of equity that we release. So let's say you have a $1 million home and you have $500,000 in equity and you have $500,000 in debt. If we buy $100,000 of shared equity from you, that represents 10% of the current value of the home. Now, when you sell your home, we get our $100,000 back and we get 2.5 times that 10% as a percentage of the increase in value. So if your house goes up from a million to 1.1 million, we would get $100,000 back and we get 25% of that $100,000. So the return on our investment is $25,000.
So hold on. So you bought 10% of a $1 million house, let's say, right?
Yes.
Right, for $100,000, right? So if the house price goes up by 10% to 1.1 million, right, how much do you get back?
So we get our initial option money back, which is the $100,000 that we paid for that 10%. And in addition to that, we get 25% of the increase in value. So we would get $125,000 back. And that gives us a return on our investment. And that capital goes back into the fund, and that is what is distributed by way of dividends to the token holders. And so even though our model is different to a traditional REIT, which is derived by rental income, there is still capital appreciation that goes back into the fund. And our fund is really almost a proxy on the house price index. So in other words, it's a very good way of getting involved in single-family owner-occupied real estate, which is very different to a REIT, which is not owner-occupied. But in addition to that, the returns that the fund makes historically have been very similar to traditional REITs.
Matthew, how does your company make money? Are you doing like a management fee structure, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we charge the homeowner between 3-4% of the capital that is released under this agreement. So that's a once-off charge. So it's very similar to points that would be charged on a loan. But again, I stress this isn't a loan. So for that $100,000, we would charge the homeowner between $3,000-$4,000 as a once-off fee. And then we charge a 2% management fee based on the assets under management. So there's no additional charges by way of promote, or there's no profit share. We just charge a flat 2% management fee.
Okay.
Matthew, going back to the 25%, let's say that the house price goes down.
Yes.
You then compensate the seller?
Well, we wouldn't compensate the seller. I mean,
what you're saying is you're taking 25% of the upside, right? What I'm trying to ask is, are you exposed 25% of the downside?
Well, no, because obviously what we wouldn't do is apply a multiple on a loss, because that wouldn't be very good. So if the house price goes down in value, so let's say that they sell the house for $1 million 3 or 4 years later. So there's no increase. So we get our $100,000 back, but we don't make any money. Then what happens is, if the house starts decaying in value significantly, then because this is not a loan, we do run the risk that the value of our asset begins to decay as well. But the way that we try and reduce our exposure is that we have a maximum loan to combined value of 90%. So in other words, if we look at the combination of the equity that we use and the existing debt, it must be no more than 90% at the time that the transaction is struck. And we also have to be careful about how we originate and where we originate these transactions. So part of the origination process is to make sure that we are investing in properties that are in areas where we will believe, where we believe there will be high capital appreciation.
And how would you, how do you structure this legally? Because basically what you're saying, what I'm getting here, using the example that you gave, where you take 10% out of $1 million house, right?
Yeah.
And the house goes up to 1.10% to 1.1 million, right? And you're saying that you're basically getting $125,000 back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's basically 11.3%. But how do you structure basically that you're, because you only have equity of 10%, right?
It's
that asset. So how did you structure the thing that you get returns more than 10%?
Well, think of it more as it's an option agreement, and in the option agreement we state quite clearly. And again, I stress that this type of transaction, the team that we have as part of our team and co-owners in the company. In a previous company, they originated over $250 million worth of these types of transactions using almost identical contracts. Now, the contract, think of it as an option agreement where we say we will advance this money based on the current value of your home on the agreement that if you sell your home and the house goes up in value, this 2.5 times multiple on the percentage that we release applies. It is purely a contract. It's a performance contract. It's not a debt. And so it's not an interest payment. And so therefore the homeowner agrees to that because it's a partnership. They know that if the value of the home goes down, then they don't have to pay any upside. So it's a true risk and reward partnership that we have with the homeowner, which is very different to debt.
Okay, so it is registered as an option, right?
It's not. It's registered on title as a performance deed of trust. And because it's treated as an option agreement from a taxation perspective, it's a future event. So there are some benefits to looking at it as an option. But the important thing is it's treated as a real estate transaction as opposed to a mortgage or a debt transaction.
I see. And okay, Eric.
I'm enjoying this. So keep going.
Okay. So yeah. So the other thing, I guess, that I'm kind of getting here is, so we talked a little bit now about kind of like the business side, right, on the
yes.
origination and the homeowner, right? And the other question is, why do this as a coin, as opposed to just a regular REIT?
Well, I think we covered that before, actually. And again, my answer then really was that tokenization gives us massive liquidity, which and it gives us access to pools of capital in a tokenized world. A traditional public.
I mean, you did say that, but basically the equity markets are quite liquid. And there's way, way more capital outside the tokenized world, right? So, you know, if it's access to liquidity, it seems to me that there's way more liquidity in the non-tokenized world.
Well, this gives us liquidity in both worlds, because if we had a traditional certificate or a traditional share, it could only be bought by people with fiat currency. In other words, if you have cryptocurrencies, you would need to change that from crypto into fiat, and then you can buy the shares. If we work within the tokenized space, people with crypto can buy our tokens, and people with fiat or normal dollars can buy our tokens. So this allows us really to take advantage. You're absolutely right. The current markets are very large and established and liquid. So we can take advantage of those markets as well as the tokenized market. But the other important thing is we have a much more of a global market that's available to us by using a tokenized version of what we're doing, rather than having a traditional securities offering, which has a much more of a restricted audience.
You're going to have to plug. I mean, I live in Canada, right? And there's no problem for me to buy a REIT that's, you know, listed on the New York Stock Exchange, right? Number one. So it seems as in the public markets, there's no problem accessing, you know, global pools of capital. Meaning you can also buy a REIT in Japan or something else, right?
Let's say that you were holding $10,000 in Bitcoin and you wanted to invest in a REIT. What would you do?
But I don't know, because I don't own Bitcoin, right? But I mean that's kind of my question.
Well, I mean,
you seem to kind of want to restrict yourself to this crypto market versus liquidity you're going after. Why not go after this massive pool of public money?
No, we are, but we're doing both. As I said, we're doing, because our buyers can be both crypto buyers and traditional buyers.
Well, let me look at the inverse. I mean, if I'm a crypto holder and I own $10,000 worth of Bitcoin, right, or Ethereum or Litecoin or whatever, and I want to buy a real estate investment trust on the New York Stock Exchange, I would convert that into U.S. dollars and then take those U.S. dollars, deposit it to my brokerage account, and then have access to, you know, I use Interactive Brokers. I have access to, I think, like, you know, 15 different countries or something like that. So I get what Radu is saying, right, where there's from
you're assuming, though, yeah, that it's very easy to transfer out of Bitcoin into cash or into dollars. It's not.
Okay.
And if you have $100,000, it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to sell Bitcoin for dollars, because the banks don't support those types of high value transactions. It's very time consuming. It's subject to enormous layers and levels of KYC and AML and OFAC protections, as it rightly should be. But it is very difficult to move quickly in and out of Bitcoin to fiat to a publicly traded REIT. You then have to sell your publicly traded REIT shares through a stockbroker. They're then settled using DTCC. You get your capital back maybe, you know, a week or 10 days later. You then have to convert that back into Bitcoin so that you can. So it's a very inefficient way of moving from Bitcoin.
So if I'm a Bitcoin holder, I can buy your tokens in Bitcoin?
Yes.
Okay.
You will be able to directly purchase our tokens in Bitcoin without having to transition through fiat.
But you're saying that if I'm just holding dollars, I can tokens with dollars too.
Yes.
Okay.
But then if I would say I would buy your tokens with dollars, right? Don't I give up liquidity? Don't I put myself in an illiquid position similar to that of the Bitcoin holder that we're just talking about?
Well, no, because then you're looking at the secondary market. So we believe that with the growth of the ATS platforms, companies like T0 and Open Finance Network and Templum, there's a number of companies that are creating secondary markets for securities tokens. It's a huge growth area. So what we believe is that there will be significant numbers of secondary market possibilities for people to move out of our token into another token or into another form of currency. Now, that's not.
What I'm saying is, I'm not talking about cryptocurrency. I'm saying, like, I am a cash buyer of your cryptocurrency, right?
Yes.
And I'm not interested in Bitcoin and anything. I'm just interested in your coin.
Yes. Right?
So I'm giving you cash, and you give me the crypto, right?
Yes.
And that would be a very easy transaction, as you're saying, right? Now, if I want to sell the crypto, your crypto, and I don't care about any other crypto. I just wanted to make an investment based on this, you know, the real estate and the business, right?
Yes.
And when I sell it, I want to get my money back.
So what you want to do, you're saying you want to sell, you want to convert from our securities token back into US dollars.
Yes.
Now, that is entirely dependent on the secondary market, but it's going to be a different.
So I basically have the liquidity of somebody like Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency, right? I'm faced with the same problems of converting back to US dollars, right?
But I think what's going to happen, though, is that the markets are going to be treated slightly different because securities tokens will be viewed slightly differently to something like Bitcoin because a security token operates under securities regulation. So you've already gone through a fairly strict AML and KYC process. And one of the biggest issues that banks face is not knowing where money has come from when it's put into Bitcoin. So the reason that banks are very cautious about converting Bitcoin into cash is because there's no paper trail of who the previous owners are. Now, and that's very different in a securities transaction because as part of the regulations, we need to know at every stage who the owners are, who represents the cap table, and what the transition has been. So we keep those records. So we believe it will be far easier to transition out of a securities token back into cash because there will be much more support from the banking sector because they'll be treated the same as any other security.
Yeah, but also I need to have a cash buyer, right?
But again, you're right. But I think what you're asking me to do is predict what the secondary market's going to be. And I don't think anyone can do that, whether it's a token or a traditional security.
Right, Matthew, it sounds like you're making, you know, one of the reasons starting this company is you're making a bet that there's a big future for this market.
Well, I think there is.
Yeah.
I think there's a big future for tokenized securities because of the efficiencies that brings in transferring ownership from one person to another. It's far more cost effective and far more efficient than traditional securities settlement systems. And I think there is an enormous future for the tokenization of securities. And tokenizing a particular asset class that allows homeowners to release locked up money without taking on more debt, that's a really good combination of using that technology for something which has real social benefits.
Right. I want to ask you something that's going to change the path of this conversation a little bit. But Radu, was there anything else you wanted to ask Matthew about everything so far? There was another question I had, but it would change the course of this conversation a little bit.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah. So. I think it's really interesting, everything you're talking about. It's very new to me, so, you know, we both have lots of questions for you. You were saying that there's a lot more, you gain some efficiencies by doing this through the blockchain versus, you know, a traditional stock market. Can you talk to us about some of the things that you don't need by having a security on the blockchain? I'm thinking even like, you know, the traditional transfer agent that you have, right?
Yeah, there's something you do need. I mean, it depends on the...
I'm just wondering. Yeah, I'm just using that as one example of like, how does that work on a
the main thing, if you think about traditional shares, they're all settled through DTCC, which is the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation. Mm-hmm. So there is a centralized mechanism to clear transactions from one owner to another. And the way that happens is the actual securities, the ownership doesn't change, but representations or certificates of proxy move from owner to owner. So there is this reliance on the systems and the data that's held within the DTCC to represent the ownership of the shares, because what the DTCC doesn't do is actually transfer ownership of the physical securities. That's very different to the blockchain. If we settle a transaction on the blockchain, ownership of a token moves from one wallet or one owner to another. And that transaction is the true transfer of ownership. And it's not the creation of a proxy certificate that represents ownership. So what we're doing is we're taking many layers out of the settlement process, and we're creating true real-time settlement and transference of ownership. And that's very important for shares. It's also very important for other types of assets, because over time, we believe that real estate itself will move onto the blockchain. So you will be able to transfer title and ownership of real estate on the blockchain rather than going through a very elongated process, which is what happens today.
Huh. I'm processing that. Radu, do you have anything to say about that?
Well, I think, I don't think it's quite as simple as that, right? I mean, when you talk about DTCC, right, it's not that, you have proxy certificates or anything like that. There are no physical certificates anymore, and it's really just kept on a ledger, who owns which shares of DTCC. And that... minus the techie parts, it kind of does about the same thing as blockchain, right? If I own shares in a company, I am actually the owner. It's not that I'm a proxy owner. I do have that ownership, and I do have that legal claim.
You're right, but your shares are normally held by a nominee company, so you don't actually have ownership of your shares. You have a representation with a nominee company who hold the shares on your behalf, and then there are
custody accounts and custody companies, and you own the shares in your own name.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't. The difference is the blockchain is a much thinner layer. So you've got lots of entities that are involved in a traditional share transaction, and those are centralized within the DTCC. So because of that, what we're doing is we're effectively flattening that process and making the process more direct. So when you settle a trade in the blockchain, it is a direct settlement. There's no need to go through a third party. And as there's no need to go through a third party, you've got much more resilience in terms of the truth or the accuracy of the information.
Isn't the blockchain itself a third party?
Well, it's a technology. It's not a third party.
Well, it is technology, but it also has cost, right? It doesn't run on air, right? So you need something to power it up.
You're right. No, but DTCC is a third-party organization that operates a platform. And the blockchain is simply a technology. So in other words, you don't need permission. You're not operating with a third-party entity. The blockchain provides a protocol and that allows transactions to happen according to that protocol. And that's actually very different to having a company that you transact with where that company provides a service.
Well, would you say that your company is acting like the third party for these tokens?
No, what we're doing is we're providing a token that sits on a blockchain, sits on a protocol, and people can move tokens from one person to another simply by giving instructions that are executed by that protocol. And we provide the framework that allows certain people in and certain people that don't qualify, we don't allow them to buy the securities. But other than that, it is a technology. So there's no, there are far fewer third parties involved, which means that there's a much faster speed of transaction. It's more reliable, and there's less cost involved.
And there's no commission for me if I wanted to sell one of those tokens or buy.
Well, there could be, but you would need to be part of the traditional securities framework. So, if you wanted to get a commission for the sale of a securities token, you'd need to be registered as a broker dealer.
Okay. But it, I mean, if I wanted to buy one of your tokens, I don't need to go through a broker dealer, you're saying, though. I can do it directly from another buyer if I'm part of the platform.
Yes, but it's as it's a security, you're actually going to be working within a broker dealer environment, even though you probably didn't know it. So if you're buying our tokens through an ATS platform, that ATS platform would need to be regulated and it would need to be registered with the SEC. So you're effectively you're working within a regulated environment.
So as an investor, are my costs going to be less per transaction because of less layers? Is that what you're getting at? Or, I mean, how does it benefit me as an investor that there's less layers?
Well, for a start, there's complete transparency in terms of what the cost layers are. In addition to that, what we're aiming for, or the reason we're creating this token, is that we believe there's going to be much more of a demand for this token than there would be for a traditional traditional sort of REIT share. So if there's more demand, if there's more liquidity, then that's better for the investors because there's more opportunity to buy and sell the tokens. But I think really what we believe is that traditional securities and the way that they are settled and the way that they are sold will change significantly over the next 5 years. So we are very much at the beginning of that process, which is going to evolve significantly.
Matthew, but that really doesn't answer Eric's question, right? Which is about the transaction costs on these, right? So, for example, right now, me, I can probably transact, REIT shares for about 0.3 cents a share, right? I mean, what you're talking about is blockchain replacing DTCC and so on. DTCC was set up this way to be efficient, and it is very efficient. It works very well. So if you want to replace it, right, you got to replace it with something that's even more efficient. So here's where we get to actually, I would actually press you for concrete transaction costs on these.
Well, I can tell you that we, I don't see how there can be how our transaction costs could be any higher than what you would be experiencing at the moment. So because of the efficiencies of the platform, because of the way that it's settled, we certainly don't see how, we don't forecast that the transaction costs would be any greater. And we believe that they will be a good degree lower than a traditional share transaction. And that's
so what you're saying would be something like, 0.1 cent per coin?
Well, it depends. What I'd like to do is answer it by saying that because of the way that we're designing the platform, the way the technology works, because it cuts out all of these third parties, it will be more efficient and it will be more cost effective. But because we don't have those precise figures to hand, I can't answer specifically how much cheaper we believe it will be.
Interesting.
So what you're telling me is you don't know what your cost is, right?
I think really because we're about 9 months away from the platform launch. You're right. I mean, what we haven't been able to do specifically yet is announce what the transaction charges will be, but they will be announced in good time, and people will be able to make a decision at that point whether or not they believe that those transaction charges represent good value.
It'd be interesting, Matthew, if you were willing, maybe in a year and a half from now or something, once you're up and running, to get you back on here and actually talk about some of how it's actually playing out in the market, if you'd be open to that.
I'd love to. I think it's a very, very exciting marketplace that you'll see an enormous number of changes, certainly over the next 18 months. So I think the whole landscape will have changed. So I'd be delighted to come back.
Yeah. Another question is, do you find that starting a company like this, that there was less hurdles to overcome doing it this way versus setting up a traditional real estate investment trust?
No, it's much more complicated.
Okay.
Because the real estate investment trust, if you're relying on traditional markets, I mean that's difficult in its own right, mm-hmm. and time consuming, requires a significant investment. But to actually put it on the blockchain, you have that in, that additional technology layer.
Was it less costly to do it this way than setting up a traditional REIT?
No, it's far more expensive. It's
far more expensive. Okay.
But we're not passing that cost on to the investors. So, all of the cost of the technology platform and the cost of the structuring of the REIT will be borne by the management company and will not be passed on to investors in the REIT. And that's actually quite different because most REITs, the investors, will be on the hook for the setup costs.
Right. That was going to be my next question.
We make that very clear in the offering memorandum.
Radu, you have any other questions?
No, I think I'm good.
Yeah, well, Matthew, thank you so much for coming on. I know we weren't easy on you, but you answered
your questions were very informed, and I'm very pleased to have this very direct Q&A session because these are questions that should be the questions that people ask, and I think that. They're very, very intelligent, very highly thought out, and I'm very pleased to be able to answer them.
Oh, there's a reason that I call this show the Intelligent Investing Podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've listened to previous episodes, but I don't like bringing on people just to butter them up and give them fluff. So.
No, it's right. I mean, this is proper debate. So I think it's there is absolutely a requirement for this, particularly in new industries and new securities markets. We really need informed discussion.
Do you see in the future, if you had to predict like 5-10 years out from now, that the way the general stock markets look in the world are going to be done more so on?
Yeah, I think it will all move onto the blockchain, but I think it will be driven by the banks. So remember, the blockchain is a technology, and that technology will be used by the banks because it creates real efficiencies. And I think we will see a movement away from central settlement. And I think there will be, and if you look at the major banks are all, Goldman's and Merrill's, they're all working with blockchain technologies because it does bring in efficiencies.
Right.
And so, yes, I do believe absolutely that in the same way that the internet had a massive impact on banking and broking and trading, blockchain will have a similar but far greater impact on securities settlement and trading.
Very interesting. Well, Matthew, thanks again so much for coming on, and I'll look forward to having you back on in maybe a year or two from now.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a great day, guys.
Okay. Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.